wanna be down with the gang.
Welcome to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, featuring John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I love being around them.
Get involved by phone at 713-780-3776. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the kings of Houston sports radio, John and Lance.
Good Wednesday morning, everybody. John and Lance along with Aaron. And you, if you want to get in, 713-780-3776, at John Granato, at Lance Zierlein, at Aaron is Blitzed, if you want to talk on the show. You're more than welcome to do that. Nick Caserio, obviously, was a big subject yesterday of conversation because of his press conference. But something else major happened in the city, and it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. Carlos Correa finalized a deal with Scott Boras, and he is going to be represented. He had to leave William Morris because William Morris Endeavor bought 10, at least right now, 10 minor league baseball teams. And the rules are you can't be an agent and own a team as well. So Carlos had to get away from them. I think it's probably a good thing for Carlos. Now you got the best in the business.
But you make more money. Here's what was surprising to me. So William Morris Endeavors is WME. They, like, for example, Ben Renzen is an agent who has my dad working with Nicholas Pettit Freer, who's a tackle from Ohio State. Ben had been at CAA, and now he's with William Morris, who, you know, has gotten into sports hot and heavy. Right. And I would think that the cachet and money, like, is it lucrative to own minor league teams?
Well,
you don't own 10 minor league teams versus having a baseball contract that's $300 million that you've got, you know, 2% of?
I've always wondered how it isn't lucrative to own a minor league team. You don't have to pay for the product. The major league team gives you the players. You don't pay them. The major league club does.
Yeah, that's never made sense to me either. Like, are we fully aware of how the contract
Yeah, that's how it works.
So they pay all the contracts.
All the contracts.
So, but what they get expense,
to take them and move them and everything else, you've got no say in anybody on the field.
What expense do you have then?
You have running a stadium. For the most part, that isn't going to have a lot of people in it.
No.
But you've got the electricity, you've got the people, you've got the concessions.
Those guys are getting paid.
Have to own all that land and everything else. I mean, you have to buy all that to build a stadium.
So does every owner of every team.
Yeah, right. But the owners are you when you and that's all you've got is that minor league team that probably isn't going to draw all that great. I understand. The thing is that you should. I would think that you would make money on this thing. You would think. Now you've also got, you know, what about repairs and everything else that goes along with the stadium? You know, I mean, there's a lot of
like
stuff that goes into
stadium. You just don't have to pay for any of the players. Now, it's not like the players. Well, some players make decent money,
and
because that what, but not really as a salary. It's the signing bonus. Minor leaguers are notoriously underpaid.
Well, and that's changing too, though. Did you see?
They'll still be underpaid.
They're up in rules. Yeah, yeah.
It was ridiculous,
the poverty level.
Oh, my God. It was sweatshop level. Yeah. Like, it was hard to believe, like $400 a week type stuff there. And then, you know, obviously they couldn't
Eight
have
guys
a second job.
In an apartment and it's just stupid.
So Carlos Correa, because of that, is going to go to a new agent, and that's bad.
I talked about this.
He says bad news. Isn't it just news? Like, does it really matter who he was with?
Everybody's going to, sooner or later, Scott Boras is going to have every major league player.
What difference does it make if he goes to, the number, no matter who he's with?
Scott Boras, well, first of all, Boras is very difficult for teams to work with, right? Because he's going to get as much as he possibly can. And listen, that means, well, I don't know that there's no hope because, listen, Carlos is the youngest free agent out there, and he will be again next year. If the money isn't there for a 10-year deal for Carlos Correa this year, Carlos Correa could come back for 1 year, $35 million, and still be the youngest free agent out there next year. I mean, he bet on himself last year. What? Maybe he's going to have to bet on himself this year because of, you know, the collective bargaining agreement and the problems that they're having. And listen, if I'm the Astros, I think you would be stupid not to think about doing that when this Verlander window and, you know, this window where you're not paying Yordan or Kyle Tucker yet. I mean, this window is still open. You bring back Carlos Correa with Verlander coming with this rotation, and you got a chance to be, again, the best team in baseball, back in the World Series again.
Right.
A really good chance.
But there's no real legitimate hope.
Well, no. Listen.
Scott Boras or no, there's no hope.
Well, Scott Boras, I'll let you know how this works. He can't be talking to teams right now. They can't be.
Okay.
Well, you know, he's not supposed to be talking to teams right now and working out a deal. And oh, by the way, you know, if you've got a shortened season or if, you know, whatever the case may be, teams right now are reluctant to give out that. Corey Seager got his. That's about it. We haven't seen those huge contracts this offseason like we saw last offseason and the year before. So maybe that's not going to be on the table for Carlos Correa. Maybe people don't think I want to pay Carlos Correa 10 years. So if I'm Carlos Correa, maybe I come back to the Astros for a year or even two and go back to free agency at 29.
You know, the one thing that Scott Boras has been great at doing is getting multiple teams involved in the same player and using one as a pace horse. The Astros got done like that with Carlos Beltran. The Astros were the pace horse that believed they had a shot. And then the Yankees he used that to keep up and up and up in the stakes. The Mets, rather. And here's the thing with this is the – and you need to keep that in mind because Boras understands the – and Carlos has even thrown it out there before he's with Boras. But Boras understands, okay, so what we can tell the Yankees is, hey, the Astros' $300 million is worth your $340 million. Because of state income tax. Yeah. And he'll have that all structured.
Oh, he does.
You know, he wants the Astros to be in the mix. If you're the Astros, it's not like you want to, like you don't want to help Carlos. It's not your job to help Carlos get multi-millions additionally from the Yankees or the Dodgers, for example, in high tax structure states. It's not your job to say, oh, yeah, we're in it. No, we're thinking about it. But Jim Crane might go along simply because it makes him look, you know, better to his own fan base. And maybe it helps Carlos. Maybe it helps them go, oh, we need to up our offer. And Carlos gets more money. Like, you're welcome, Carlos. We knew you weren't coming back here anyway, so we'll play the game with you and we'll help you out help you get more. But it's certainly not their job.
No.
It's not the Astros' job to try to help him get more from the Yankees.
And if the Astros publicly go, we're out of the Carlos Correa sweepstakes. Sorry, Carlos, we're not going to pay that kind of money.
That's okay, too.
That's okay, too.
By the way.
That's fine, too. And you know what? That you're not coming back here. We know that. So we're not going to play about pace horse for you. That's okay. Either way, it's business. But I do feel like with this work stoppage here, that there is a chance. There is a chance. And I'll tell you, according to what I've heard, is no one, and we've heard this before, when Dallas Keuchel walked into free agency, when he was negotiating with teams, Scott Boras had books, gigantic books about Dallas Keuchel and his place in baseball. And now, it didn't work out for Dallas Keuchel the way he thought it was going to work out. He thought he was going to be a $150 million player. It just didn't work out that way. But there is no stone that Scott Boras leaves unturned, okay? If you're going to have a meeting with Scott Boras, apparently you're going to be there for hours because Scott Boras is going to be detailed in everything that he does. And if, in fact, Scott Boras believes, let's get 35, 36 per for 2 years and then get back on the free agent market in 2 years at 29, you're still going to be a really young player, and you already got 72 in the bank.
He's got skins in the game. He is more likely to see that than somebody like William Morris, who's trying to make a splashy first signing.
Exactly.
But I don't think that's – but I also don't think that's likely.
I don't know.
I think it's highly unlikely. Told us it was bad news to start the show.
It is bad news because Scott Boras is always going to work you for squeeze you out of every single dollar that he could possibly get. But I don't think Jim Crane, and we've seen Jim Crane, he's paid $66 million for Verlander. He's given Altuve 33. He's got Bregman's going to make 33, 35 this year as well. He's not afraid to pay big money to guys. He just doesn't want that long-term guarantee
deal. All right, two at 75.
That's a lot, but you know what? I don't think it's out of the question.
No, but would Scott Boras consider what is it? Bird in the hand, two in the bush. What's the phrase?
Well, yeah.
Yesterday I said something. My dad and I were talking. I said, I mixed my metaphors. I said, hey, throwing around money like manhole covers. He goes, Lancey, you really screwed that one up. I said, what? Oh, yeah. That's terrible.
It's called, it said nickels.
It's nickels. Like, yeah.
Nickels, yeah.
Manhole covers around like nickel. No.
Nickels around like manhole covers. Right.
And I'm like, yeah, money like manhole covers would be.
That's not right.
Although it technically would be right.
It is because
I was talking about excessive spending.
Right.
So it actually was incredibly wrong.
Right.
Like it was,
the opposite. It was the opposite.
Yeah. So so a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. That's what he could look at, Scott Boras could look at with, even if it's a 9-year, $300 million deal, Scott Boras could look at that and say, I'm not goofing around. I'm not going to.
No. If somebody comes up with $300 million, of course he's going to do that. Mm-hmm.
If Carlos gets a $300 million, you can forget about it. What if Carlos's offer is two? What if it's 9 years?
Been 275, and he returned it down.
Yeah. So you ain't getting. Well, I don't know. Maybe that gives you a little bit of hope that a 2-year, $75 million. Ball out for 2 years and then get. Well, now, how old will he be at the end of it?
He'll be 29. I mean, that's still young. When you're still in your 20s, that's still young. And by the way, now all you need
for a pitcher,
all you need now is 8 years because you've already got the two at 75. All you need now is seven or eight years. And oh, by the way, you're getting at a rate of $37.5 million.
If you get it at 7 times 40, 280, then all of a sudden you would have made $355 for 10 years.
That's right. That's right, which is more than those guys, than Seager and Lindor.
Hey, Scott, bet on Carlos. Oh, what? You don't believe in Carlos?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, you don't think Carlos can play.
Well, it's 2 years that he's got to stay healthy, and he's got to be productive.
I just made a 2-year, $75 million offer on behalf of Jim Crane. If you can't accept
You represented Al Davis, not Jim
Crane.
No,
the Texans.
Oh, that's right. You represent the Texans.
When I make one favorable comment about a Raider player to Al Davis, and he asks, you represent the Texans? Are you allowed to have these discussions? Actually, Al didn't say that. It was his henchman that he called over. Talked to him. The henchman came over. Al drove away in a golf cart. The henchman said, Mr. Davis wanted to know if you are in the capacity of making offers from the Houston Texans. I am not. Okay. That's what he was curious about because you were talking to him about his players. Okay, I'll just
shut up.
I'll just let Al keep being the most G'd up owner in history.
712 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. All right, we got that. We'll talk Caserio on the other side. I guess we have to talk about Caserio. Good Lord. All right, and his job and everything else that goes along with it. We will do that on the other side. If you've got any comments about Carlos or anything else, you're more than welcome. Bubba McDowell is going to join us a little bit later in the show. He is the new head coach at Prairie View A&M. And then Seth Greenberg at 9:15 to talk college hoops with the most amazing story in college basketball right here in our city.
I'm excited, by the way, about Houston. You know, our Rockets. Later on, I want to get to the Rockets because they take on the Utah Jazz. And even though the Jazz they're always good. I mean, Dennis Lindsay put them on a pretty good course. He's gone now, but the Jazz are on.
He's not dead. He's just
gone. No. He's gone from the organization.
He's no longer.
He's still
with
collecting
them.
A check.
He's no longer with them. He's still with us.
Yeah, he's still with us. But our record's not good. Their record is good. But it's still fun to beat the Jazz in Utah.
Well, let's see. We'll do that. Well, speaking of hoops, let's talk about Hoops Sporting Goals and Equipment. And if you want your kid to someday be a Rocket, you know what? You got one shot. You got one shot. That shot is a Hoops Sporting Goal. The best goal. The kids love it. You want them to learn how to dunk? Yeah. Well, he can't dunk on a 10-foot goal, and she can't either. You know what? The girls love to dunk, too. Why we can't let the girls dunk? The girls want to dunk? So you think they're getting up on that 10-foot goal? No, Dad, lower it, especially if they're 5 and 6 years old. They ain't getting way up there, all right? They ain't getting up there if they're 18 or 19 or 20, probably. Neither are your boys because they're not that athletic. But here's the deal. You lower the goal, and they can dunk and actually have fun, and that's where they'll be. They'll be outside playing as opposed to playing video games all day long and getting pasty white, okay? So if you're looking for a great way for your kids to have fun, enjoy, there's one goal, and it's the Hoops Sporting Goal because you can raise and lower it, and, oh, by the way, it's the best goal ever. It's Hoops Sporting Goals. ProDunkHoops.com. That's ProDunkHoops.com.
Why don't we take a break?
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
97.5.
Conversation continues on The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, it's 717 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So Nick Caserio was on the competing morning show over on the flagship yesterday. And a few of the things, a couple of things that he talked about is a season end kind of thing. We're not going to get him, so we listen to the stuff that he said over there. And amongst the stuff that he said is Deshaun Watson is not playing for the Texans again. Basically, he said he's not playing for the Texans again. He said, you know, they asked him, you know, if Brian Flores is, and they're a match set, you know, they're a combination, the two of them, Brian Flores and Deshaun Watson, would that work out? And he said, nah, that's probably not going to work out. That's probably not happening. I don't think Brian Flores is going to be the coach here.
It is a two-way deal, by the way. Texans don't want it to happen. Deshaun doesn't want it to happen.
No.
So it's dead, deader than dead. Mm-hmm. There is no chance. It's an interesting combination to talk about, but yeah, it's not happening.
Yeah. So Deshaun done. Still a lot of talk about Miami. Obviously Denver in the mix. The Giants.
I don't know
are
how Miami is a. Deshaun wants Miami to be a thing. I don't think it's a thing.
Well, how about the story just came out that Deshaun Watson, Stephen Ross called him the day before the November 2nd trade deadline, and Stephen Ross wanted to talk to Deshaun the night before, and Deshaun refused to take his call.
That's a little puzzling. The information that was out there that Mark Berman had was accurate. They thought a deal was going to get done.
Yeah.
Miami thought a deal was going to get done. Now, I guess maybe the way the Dolphins finished changed everyone's mind a little bit, but they thought a deal was going to get done. There was 18 of the 22 women had agreed to a settlement. The Deshaun side thought, okay, that's good enough. Like, we'll knock these out, and then we'll just take care of the other ones, you know, at some point we'll get it knocked out. And Stephen Ross apparently wanted all of them done. He didn't want any stragglers, which you can understand. And so once the stragglers were still on the table, there were still four, then that broke all the communications down. But Sean's side, I think, believed that a deal was going to get done because they were going to get so many of these deals settled. Now, what doesn't make sense to me, even to this day, is how do you not settle with the 18 and just have the four? But I think maybe Tony Busby's side looked at that as, okay, if we couldn't get something done, we'll just hit reset and maybe come up with a new number for you that will not be as friendly, and that'll put more pressure on you because we now have leverage because we know you have to have these last four finished. So I think it's still an issue. It's still going to cost a lot of money. I think one of the things that could happen, and I'm just surmising here, this is just me pulling something out of my booty. But it wouldn't surprise me if Deshaun and the team wants Deshaun and his squad and David Mulgeta want to wait. And as soon as they think they have a deal done, they say, listen, if you want to get this deal done, it's going to cost Deshaun this much for the settlement. And we're not saying this is your fault, but we need to get a new deal done so Deshaun has an opportunity to, you know, keep balling out and dripping because he's going to have a bunch of money come out
There's
of his,
a lot of
his account. And I can tell you what an owner's going to think. You want us to pay for his settlements and his lawyer? This is what we're doing. We're paying for we're paying for freaky deaky stuff.
Yeah.
But the other way they could look at that.
Little do they know they're paying for all kinds of freaky deaky stuff.
But the other way, for guys that are on their team.
Yeah. Right.
But the other way they're going to look at it is, well, if we do that, we want to tag 3 more years on his deal, David. So you want us to give him more money? He hasn't even played. He got a signing bonus. He won't have even played a game, and he's already threw that money, basically, in a manner of speaking. And you want us to give him a new contract? Okay, that's fine. We'll give him a new contract. We'll kick him some more signing bonus. We're not going to go overboard, but we're going to tag on 2 to 3 more years on this contract. That'll probably be what happens. But that way, they can say, okay, let's be more aggressive with our offer to and get this thing knocked out. That's how I think it will go down.
All right. So Casario also asked about being on the – there's a couple interesting points here. Being on the headset during the game. Here's what he said. I would say this year was more just listening, observing. If there were things that came up during the game that we needed to talk about situationally, then we would communicate that. So my philosophy has been just provide information where necessary, be a resource, and be as helpful as possible. He said he's been – listen, I've been on the headsets for 20 seasons in New England. I was always on the headsets. It's not a big deal. He says, I would say I think it maybe gets a little bit magnified because of my title and my role. In my mind, I know what my role and title is, but I don't look at it that way. I'm a football person. I'm engaged in the game. I was very well trained with a great organization. So you're trying to take all of that information and disseminate and use it in a most efficient way possible.
You know what? I'm just going to say this. I think that's fair.
I think that's fair, too.
I think it's fair. I don't have a problem. You have a problem with it, Aaron?
No, I was going to say, in my personal experience as a producer, doing this, I can talk in your guys' ears when you need. That doesn't go on air. So it's kind of the same thing. And when I do University of Houston football, I'm on a headset with those guys.
Difference
and
would
I'm
be,
always talking in their ears, pointing out things for the broadcast.
Difference would be is if it were like Todd.
Or David Gallo.
David Gallo. David's the owner, so it's a little different.
Yeah, right.
And David's way better.
Yeah, and we don't want to hear what Todd has to say anyway in the show.
But having like Todd in here telling us stuff.
Yeah, Todd.
Like, hey.
Yeah.
It would feel like, hey, Todd, hey, what do you let us do our show? You do, you run the station. Well, and I would imagine most head coaches.
Todd would just say, hey, let's go back to the Aggies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get back to Aggie talk. But I do think most head coaches would be like, what are you doing? But if he's talking about down and distance, but the game strategy stuff, he maybe got out over his skis much more than he would with Bill Belichick because it's David Culley. And he knows. That's why David Culley said, I was listening in, and Nick and Romeo are talking about it'd take a timeout here and all that. And that's what had us. That's direct game management.
He does
stuff.
That is game management. But he did say, he said, well, not having their general manager on the headsets, they do have personnel related individuals or analytics staff on headsets. I would say there are other people throughout the league. They either have their analytics person or somebody from their personnel department maybe doing some of the
same
things.
That's true.
Analytics. You should.
Yeah.
And there should be somebody in their head going, call a timeout here. Call a timeout here. Call a timeout here.
But it's not general managers.
Yes. But just because it is general. You know what? It is kind of fair. If Nick Casario is a guy who's done it for 20 years, and now just because he's the general manager, it doesn't matter. He's got 20 years of experience on the headset that he can help with game management. And just because he's the general manager doesn't mean he may be the most qualified person to be doing this. Now, it didn't show up on the field with David Culley, with his timeout usage, with his the way he went about his penalties and everything else. But it's someone that actually could understand. And I feel bad. But, you know, David Culley just was unfit for this job. And the next one probably doesn't need Casario in his ear nearly as much. Hopefully he won't need him in his ear as much to explain simple things that a head coach should know. So maybe he won't be nearly as involved in the game.
It doesn't sound nefarious, and I don't think that it is. I think Nick loves being a football guy. So I had a conversation with somebody who it has to do with somebody who was on New England staff who once said, you know, Nick was a guy who, even when he went from the coaching side where he was, I think, an assistant. I don't think he was ever officially a positions coach. I think he was an assistant wide receiver coach, I believe. Nick, when he went to the front office, apparently still tried to do coaching stuff. Like he was still, when I went to that practice this year, you see him with position groups. Like I think in his heart, he loves that.
Mm-hmm.
I think he likes personnel. I think he loves coaching. And so he wants to be involved in that. I would say that that's fine in a vacuum, but you do also have to be aware that you really should not overstep your bounds for your head coach. And maybe it shouldn't be your voice in a headset because you are considered the boss. And maybe that could have an impact on how a coach manages a game because he doesn't want to step on his quote-unquote bosses, the guy who hired him, his feet. Maybe there should be a separation of power of church and state in that particular instance. So that's another thing, too, is do you want the guy who hired you and who will fire you to be telling you stuff where you think if you go against what they think,
yeah,
it could have an impact on you, especially if you're a young first-time coach? That would be a little bit of a concern to me.
That's a problem. That wasn't all. We got more stuff, and specifically we got Jack Easterby to talk about on the other side. So we will do that on the other side, right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Anything that we have mentioned here, maybe you find it egregious, him being on the headset. I don't know. Maybe you do. Maybe you don't. Whatever the case may be, you're more than welcome to get in. 713-780-3776. Maestro, it's your turn.
Maestro Dobell, I want to tell you about the great tequilas that they're making, the varietals. You know, you maybe think that there's just one tequila. That's the stuff you pour in your margaritas, and that's how you make it. And that's fine. You still want to have a great silver for that. But Maestro Dobell is so much more than that. And for people who love tequila or you want to experience something different, you really need to check out the different varietals of Maestro Dobell, including their Diamante. And this is a Cristalino. And the Cristalino is a blend of three different types of tequilas that they make. Then they charcoal filter it. And the result is this unbelievably distinct, crisp, smooth flavor that is fantastic as a sipping tequila or in cocktails for elevated margaritas, for example. They've got the Añejo, the Super Añejo, which has, it's one of the smoothest tequilas you can possibly experience. Their Smoke Silver, which is for smokier flavor. I like to use that in my cocktails because I do like a smokier flavor. Reposado, they've got so many different varietals for you to choose from, and they can be found anywhere fine liquors are sold. So if you're looking to step your tequila game up, or if you're a tequila person and you really want to experience one of the very best you can find, but still at a very affordable price point, check out Maestro Dobell. Maestro Dobell.
ESPN 97.5. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Talking Houston Texans. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be talking with Seth Greenberg. And he's going to talk about Kelvin Sampson and the job that they're doing. Cougs won last night. 18.5-point favorites, win by 19.
That's called a win-win.
It is. They were up by 20 at the half, and they lost the second half by 1 point. But you know that's when all of the subs are going in and everything else, when you're up by 20 with 5 minutes left. And it got hairy for anybody that gave the 18.5.
But not for people who just wanted to win.
Yeah.
They handled their business. They didn't, slip up.
People
that
just win.
Yeah, now you'd like a cover, but yeah, you want a cover. Houston's laying a heavy number with a. I still think they're laying numbers that are relative to being a healthy team.
I know. Well, Jamal Shedd was back, which was good.
Yeah.
But Kyler Edwards and Josh Carlton have been fantastic.
So this is one of the things that Houston's going to find out. They're going to find out that they have some players who are maybe better offensively than they expected, or who are more ready to step up. That's what we've seen at least the last couple games, where guys have stepped up and said, "Hey, maybe I can do more than you thought I could. Or maybe now that I'm being called on, I can truly be the player I am."
Yeah.
So that's good. And they have a next man up mentality. So, I love talking to Kelvin Sampson. He was so fun to talk to because he's just so old school in his approach of you can always find a way to do it through grit and determination and work. And if you get everyone to buy into a single goal, there still is that mentality. And there still are players that are like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, go back to Friday. We had him on Friday, and what was that, 8:30? It was 8:30, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you want to hear that interview, he's awesome. He was unbelievable. And speaking of work ethic and doing it right, everything right, Jack Easterby was a topic of conversation yesterday. And Caserio was pretty blunt. He says Jack has been a hot topic for a lot of people. I'd say candidly some of the criticism has been unfair. I think Jack has an important role in the operational and logistics standpoint. That's what he was brought here to do. That's his role in football operation. I talked about this last spring. Anything as it pertains to making football decisions, whether it's players, contract signings, scouting, draft analysis, these all fall under my jurisdiction. So I would say if you look at a football operation in its entirety, it takes a number of different people. He has a lot of respect for Jack Easterby. When you get time to spend time with him, you probably realize it's probably not as bad as everyone makes it out to be. Well, that's not a glowing.
Well, apparently there's a lot of people on their own station. I don't know if he listens to us or not. Anybody? I don't know if Jack's ever heard anything we said. Jack heard what I said at that little media get-together where everyone was slurping up whatever Bill said, just eating taquitos and like, okay, Bill, we're having a great time having a beer with you. And I'm like, hey, can I ask you about this DeAndre Hopkins trade and the Laremy Tunsil stuff? Why are you so mad? Mm. And Jack had to jump in. Bill, let me handle something for a second. I don't know if it's impossible not to know. I mean, the national media jumped on Jack. So,
listen, we know that Jack has been in the middle of a lot of these bleep
that's
ups.
What do I think he's really dangerous now? I think you're always potentially dangerous when you have the owner's ear and you can get him to flip on anyone at a moment's notice. That is always going to be a concern in a building, even if you're maybe not if you're Nick Caserio. But certainly for everyone else. With that said, do I think that he's in danger of making screwed up personnel stuff and contracts anymore? No. But it's almost like, really?
Did he have anything to do with David Culley's contract?
I have no idea.
Well, I don't either.
I don't know. But I also don't know. I also don't know that was not a two-year deal. That may have also been a two-year deal. And the national media may have gotten that one wrong, too. Because two makes a whole lot more sense. It's something like Nick Caserio would do is like, oh, we'll give you a 4-year deal, but it's really a 2-year deal. That actually sounds more feasible than the other one for Nick. For Jack and Bill, no, 4-year full. Their decision.
I don't know. We don't know. The
I honestly, in your heart of hearts, you think Jack is dangerous personnel wise right now? I don't either. I think he's completely impotent. I don't think he has any opportunity to screw anything up. Nick is the boss. Nick would fight him and beat him to a pulp if they got into a fight. That's what would happen. Nick would fight you, and he'd go into robot football guy mode and beat his ass. With that all said...
That's funny right there.
Thanks, Jack. With that all said, I do believe that... part of me is still upset that... Can you just acknowledge publicly... You know what would make me feel better? I understand you're not going anywhere. If you just acknowledge, boy, I was way out over my skis on that one. I thought being a football guy was easier than it was. I thought it was something I wanted to do, and I tried hard, but I made some egregious mistakes that really murdered our cap, horrible contracts, brought guys in. Like, it was just, I mean, David Johnson just, oof. Boy, I learned a valuable lesson there. Don't ever do stuff that you don't know what you're supposed to do. If he said that, this is what I would do. Like, you know what? All right. You can hand out prayer cards and stuff like that. We're good now. That's fine. As long as you acknowledge how terrible you were and that you don't just try to have everyone think it was on Bill O'Brien and you acknowledge what you were responsible for, I'd be good with Jack.
No, he stood on the table for the Tunsil trade without an extension. Don't be afraid. We can't be afraid.
You know that for a fact.
I know it for a fact.
So it bothers me that he tries to get out of that and just like hide in the shadows and wait until the spotlight's not on him. If he would just come out and say, I screwed up a lot of stuff. I shouldn't have been in that position. I thought I was ready for it. I wasn't, and that was my fault. And me, as a man of God, I've got to understand that faith is good, but skill is better when it comes to personnel decisions. And so, I know my role now. Know your role, and whatever The Rock said, that's what I'm doing now. I'm doing know my role and shut my mouth or whatever. People's eyebrow, people's elbow, and then Nick's doing it.
And no one knows my name, and no one cares about my
name. What's my name? Nobody cares what my name is. If he said that, I'd be like, you know what, Jack? I'd probably fist bump him. I'm like, we're good. You do your stuff that you're doing now that everyone seems to be happy with.
Well, it's funny, though.
At least you admitted that you screwed this up.
It's funny how he put this, though, Caserio. I would say that I have a lot of respect and appreciation for the job that Jack does. And candidly, not a lot of people really understand the nuts and bolts of it. But when you get a chance to spend time with Jack, I mean, you realize... It's probably not as bad as everybody makes it out to be. What?
So he's heard it too.
So, look, Jack's been a punching bag since he got here. Some of it, I think, quite frankly, was a little bit unjust. So.
What about the other?
Listen.
I wish he'd say the other. And some of it was just.
That's right.
Say that, Nick.
Everybody has an opinion, and they're certainly entitled to their opinion. We'll just kind of keep moving forward. He basically says, some of it was.
I will admit. he does. Nick Caserio, for being a guy who won't answer a question ever.
Quite frankly, this is as candid as he's ever been.
That's as candid as he's been, and he even told you quite frankly and candid in his answer. Yeah. He used those phrases. There is some, and this is a good thing, there is some A.J. Hinch to him in that he's going to make his comment, and he's going to not get too, he's definitely never going to get too emotional in anything he does. Probably not a bad thing. It's probably not a bad thing that he's football robot.
Yeah.
And people all say he's very, very smart, highly intelligent, loves football, and that he's football robot.
I hope Nick Caserio is the greatest general manager ever. And you know what? People are, how you feel about Texans winning the game? Looking good. I love it. I love it. I want the Texans to win every game. Okay? But when they're a bunch of goofs and as incompetent as you could possibly be, then you got to call him out for it, so maybe things will change. And you know what? I believe in Nick Caserio. That draft was pretty damn good. He caught a lot of grief for that draft. He didn't have a first or second rounder. He had two-thirds, and I think they were both pretty good. I think he did a nice – I think Brevin Jordan, I think that, you know, he possibly got a future here. Lopez, Wallow. That draft was pretty damn good for not having much to work with. So he had guys on the field, maybe because they're so terrible on other teams, those guys wouldn't even get a chance. Okay, I get it.
let's see how it plays out.
At least
out
they made plays. At least they got on the field and they made plays. And you know what? And you're like, oh, maybe they're not so bad. And oh, by the way, the decision to go with Davis Mills could quite frankly change the direction of the organization. In which now the other day he said this. He did say, you know, if we draft that third pick or whatever we do with that third pick, I, you know what? I love that he's open to the – I don't know that there's anybody – if Thibodeau is sitting there, maybe somebody's got to have Thibodeau.
Man, I watched more Thibodeau tape yesterday when I was watching his tackle from Washington. Oh, man, that's nerve-wracking. There was just so much buzz on Thibodeau, and then when you watch him, you're like, man.
Well, maybe.
You see the projections, but – you definitely see that Hutchinson is 100% safer pick than Thibodeau.
Really?
Yeah, it is. You just know that the floor is so much higher because Hutchinson knows how to play. Thibodeau doesn't know how to play, so he's not as skilled, so what you're looking for is, okay, but can Thibodeau, with more coaching, become more dangerous? And so that's the projection, but that was what was said with Jadeveon Clowney, and frankly, Clowney is a better, more fluid athlete than Kayvon Thibodeau is. So I would actually say Thibodeau coming out has a lower grade than Jadeveon Clowney does. I think that's pretty fair and accurate to say that he has a lower total grade than
well, Clowney was the number one overall pick. And
I don't know that I would love Thibodeau here. Some of the stuff I've heard about, you know, he might be a little bit of a needs handlers type. Got a lot of followers, surrounders, and really, you know, it's brand-oriented, my brand. Is he one of those guys that loves football? I don't know that he's going to pass the Nick Caserio.
What kind of drip does he have, though?
I don't know.
That's kind of
I don't know. But I don't know that he's going to pass the Nick Caserio smell test. The third pick, I would have no problem with drafting Evan Neal. However, Dane Brugler, and we'll get Dane on sometime soon. I'm doing my podcast drops with him today on The Athletic, our first draft podcast. He has Jacksonville drafting Evan Neal first because they need tackle.
Mm.
And he just said, you know what? I'm drafting Evan Neal one. Well, if that's the case, then Hutch would go too.
Is he worthy of being the number one overall pick?
I mean, in most years, no. This year, I probably wouldn't. I would probably try to move that pick. But finding people to trade up is going to be tough. Finding people to trade up is going to be really tough. The player that I love that has so much football character and can change culture, I think, is Kyle Hamilton from Notre Dame. The problem is safety. It's a safety. Yeah. Like, how much value does a safety have at 3? Not enough. At 7? A lot more.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's the thing is, can Nick trade back and get that type of guy? I wouldn't draft Stingley 3rd. There's not a lot of people I would draft 3rd this year. This is my concern with this draft.
Don't get Stingley 3rd. Please. You talk about a guy who, I don't know. I just don't feel like
he's lived
football off
of 2019.
He doesn't. That's not a guy that I think
he's
loves
He's played
football.
10 games since 2019, and it does not look like 2019.
No.
And 2020, the effort level was so minimal that it's a concern. Because I know he's like, I'm just going to protect myself, but.
You know, and sometimes, in some ways, you can't blame him, but
But in some, ways, I want the innate
and drinks football.
Yeah, like you say, you can't blame him. But I also want somebody who you say, well, I couldn't blame him because he just loves to compete so badly that he was out there balling out. Like, yeah. I want that kind of, man, this guy's out there and like, we can't, we're like, dude, you got to back off a little
bit. Well, speaking of LSU and speaking of drip, Joe Burrow has got he's got some stuff going on. We are going to talk about that on the other side right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. But first I'm talking about HRP and just the greatness that is HR. I love these guys. I mean, they make Laura happy here. Laura is our CFO, and she's got to take care of all the business stuff here. And one thing she doesn't have to ever worry about is the payroll, because it's always done perfectly. And then whenever we have any issue whatsoever HR wise, we call them. You want to make sure that you're compliant. Otherwise, you know, there have been businesses lost because they don't do a good job HR-wise, making mistakes HR-wise. Well, let the experts take care of that. That's what HR&P is here for. And if you're looking for the people that are going to take care of you tax-wise as well, HR&P is here for you too. The Affordable Care Act, kind of a big deal. Don't do this by yourself. You don't know the rules. You're going to screw up. You're going to get fined. But if your payroll company isn't taking care of you come tax time with all that stuff, they just go, here's your stuff. No, that's not the way that a payroll company should go about it. They need to be in the middle of that for you every single year, and that's what HRP does. You're looking for that kind of service, those kind of people, that's what you get at HRP. HRP.net, 281-880-6525 or HRP.net.
Stay tuned for more John and Lance on ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You know who Rochelle Ryan is? I didn't know who Rochelle Ryan is. I'm not a porn enthusiast, though. So, apparently, she is. And
not an enthusiast.
She's shooting her shot at Joe Burrow.
Wait, she Rochelle Ryan?
Rochelle Ryan, yeah.
She's also in the news for something else.
What?
You know, so I guess this, what's her name? Marianne, Kellyanne, what's her, the one who's now got a fantasy show?
Oh, yeah. What?
Former porn girl?
Lisa Ann.
Yeah. So that seems like somebody that frankly, we might have had her on the show at some point in our career, but definitely that
she's on with Sean all the time. I mean, like every week she's on with them.
She's got a mainstay on that show.
It definitely sounds like something AJ would have had on the show for sure.
Yeah,
100% on his show.
But I've talked to her before, Lisa Ann.
So I think she's now opened the door for other people in the industry to say, hey, let me see about dabbling in the world of football. Maybe not like that. Maybe not like
that. Well, there was the one that Gronk had. He took a picture of, and she was wearing his jersey.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Garoppolo. Remember when on a date with a porn star?
Well, but this is,
when Garoppolo went on a date?
Yeah, but I've got a Rochelle Ryan article, too, that's not about Joe Burrow. There's two football stuff with
Rochelle's
her.
Busy.
Okay.
She's a busy, busy girl.
Read yours, I'll read mine.
Well, she put out on her Instagram, she put Joe Burrow lining up, getting ready to take a snap, and she just says, "What's up, Joey Burrow?" I mean, she likes Joey Burrow, and you know what? Joey's an attractive young man. He owns the state of Ohio right now. Maybe he's not your type, but he's apparently Rochelle Ryan's type.
He is super pasty.
He's really pasty.
Would he be her type if he was...
If he was an insurance agent? I don't know.
Yeah. Does he have that kind of looks? Those kind of like, you could be... Not that insurance agent. Not that there's anything wrong with any other job, but does he have the looks that would have her going, ooh, what's up? I'll let you... handle my beer distribution anytime. No, Joe doesn't have it going on.
Well, I don't know. You don't know.
He's a winning quarterback. That's what he's got going on for him. Because here's what Rochelle Ryan also said. This player on the Patriots keeps messaging me to fly out to Boston. I obviously told him no, and he still keeps pressing it. So I had to remind him that the Pats gave up 47 points to the Bills, and they didn't even punt. And this clown plays defense. He finally stopped messaging me.
Well, she knows
she's into football.
Yeah. So now Joe Burrow, that's not the main story. That's just a side story. That's just Joey's side piece right there. So now Joe Burrow, though, went to his press conference. Okay. Joe Burrow went to his press conference the other day wearing shades. Okay. It was a bit odd to see Joe Burrow. I mean, he was just on ESPN in a Bengals ski cap. That's Joe Burrow, right? He showed up the other day wearing shades at the press conference, and the first thing they asked was, what's up with the shades? And he says, I think they're pretty cool. What do you think?
What do you think?
Yeah.
And everyone just laughed. So I brought this up when we came on the show. So here's my thing with Joe Burrow. I think he is a guy who doesn't know he's not cool. Like, wants to wear the stuff that Ja'Marr Chase would wear, wants to do all that stuff. And he doesn't know that he's got kind of the pasty kid look. Like,
he's
not on that Brady.
I think he's very self-aware.
He's not on that Brady level. Those glasses show he's not. He thinks he's in full drip mode. He's in Brady mode already.
Do you think Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Yeah, Brian's is incredibly self-aware.
So
he's in dad mode.
Didn't he wear who
the tracksuit
outfit?
No, you're not making
with the bling and
all that. Yeah, he wore Deshaun Jackson's as a joke because he looked like Conor McGregor.
Right.
That was like he's extraordinarily aware. Joe Burrow is not self-aware. I think Joe Burrow, but let me finish what I'm going to say here. I think Joe Burrow thinks, no, these glasses look good. I'm in drip mode now. I'm Tom Brady now. I mean, I'm all in my Tom Brady bag right now. This is what I'm doing. But here's the thing. I still kind of like it because even though I think Joe isn't in on it yet, like he doesn't know, he's got so much swagger and so much confidence that there's something about him that I really like. Like,
yeah.
I like the fact, because I think Tom Brady was like that. Go look at Tom Brady.
His first practice, he walked up to Robert Kraft and said, I'm going to be the best draft pick you ever had.
He was pretty dorked out his first couple of years. Go look at Tom Brady. But Ted Johnson told a story one time where I was at an event with him that Tom Brady, the first time he got in the huddle when they had to have him take over quarterback because of injury to Bledsoe, he's jumping around like, you got to do it. And we're like, dude, what is this dork doing? Like, what's he doing? But he had such a level of confidence that you slowly started to buy in. And I think there is, I mean, I hate saying, I to me, it's the most unfair thing you can do to a player is talk about Jordan-esque and Brady-esque. It's so unfair because the standard is so ridiculous. But there is something about the way he came up and the way he comports himself and the way he approaches the game and this kind of he's in over his head, but he's not.
Right.
Like he doesn't play like he should be playing. He's plays better than you think he should be playing.
Way better. So
I kind of like it.
So, and not only that, but you want to talk about a level of confidence when asked, you know, hey, how about making the playoffs? He goes, well, it took longer than I thought. Took longer than you thought. You were injured last year.
Somebody deals with Joe Burrow right now. This guy told me this the other time. He's like, I just don't like Joe. But he said, you're 100% correct about Burrow. It's not self-deprecating. He absolutely thinks he's cool like that. But that's okay. That's okay because Joe thinks he's got it And he looks kind of nerdy. But as long as you keep balling.
Wait a minute.
You're going to morph into it. Dress like the job you want.
Joe thinks he's cool. Joe was player of the year in Ohio in high school.
Yeah.
Won a national championship, one of the greatest seasons ever in college football history. Goes to the pros. He's the number one overall pick, and he takes his team, the worst team
Heisman.
In football, won a Heisman.
Yeah.
You know what, Joe is? Cool.
But he's not cool.
He is cool.
No, he's got a
just
great.
Just because he looks
he's
pasty.
He's got a cool.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
You are so racist. You have to be dark to be cool?
No, you just have to be cool to be cool.
You look at how white you are.
You have to be cool
to
be
proud.
You have to be cool to be cool.
You mean the guy who won the Heisman, the national championship?
That doesn't...
Number one overall pick?
Okay, so was like, okay, Baker's cool. No, Baker's not cool either.
He didn't win no national championship.
Baker's not cool either. He won the Heisman, he did all that stuff.
Baker's cool enough to have a
bunch of commercials. I don't think Kyler Murray's cool. I think cool is a demeanor, and Joe does have the demeanor. I think the way he looks I think he's growing into it the same way Tom Brady did. Tom Brady wasn't cool his first 2 years. He looked like a mega dork. Look at him. I'm Tom Brady. He was just dorked out. And now you look at Tom now, and Tom is like, everyone thinks that about Tom. Now, some of it is the winning. The winning makes you feel and look cooler. Then he pulls a supermodel. Then he pulls, like, he's pulling all these. Like, Joe's on his way. I'm trying to give Joe a compliment. I think Joe's on his way to being what he wants to be. He's already dressing like it. I mean, he's got, maybe not dressing like it. He tried out his sunglasses. Why do you think everyone's like, the sunglasses went viral?
They were laughing.
Because it doesn't fit Joe Burrow yet. But in his mind, it fits him already.
But he's catching some bleep this morning. I heard on the show, Burrow. For these comments.
From Keyshawn?
They were like, how about already Joe Burrow's thinking he's...
Play these comments. These comments are great.
Here's Joe Burrow talking about making the playoffs and what it means.
Yeah, I think the fans were very excited, but I tried to downplay it and all that because this is, this is how it's going to be from here on out. This is a great win for us, but this is the standard for the bare minimum every year going forward. I think that's the one of the biggest jobs of a quarterback is displaying confidence in yourself, and part of being a leader on the team is showing that confidence in all your other guys as well.
There's nothing.
So what was the problem?
So listen, Joe's used to winning. Joe won in high school. Joe won in college. Joe's like, we're winning here. So I know it's the Bengals organization, but guess what?
What's the problem?
We're gonna win.
But what's the problem?
Well, who had a problem? Cocky. That he,
I swear to God, if it really just depends on the quarterback. If Lamar Jackson had said that, it'd be like, this is my quarterback. This is why I love him. He's the MVP. He's fearless. He knows the team buys into that. They feed off of his confidence. You have to keep the same energy. I like that for Joe Burrow because I know he believes it. If Matt Schaub said it, I would know Matt Schaub's just saying something out loud and doesn't really believe it. There's a lot of quarterbacks that I wouldn't believe that they believe that. Like if Baker Mayfield said it, I would think that Baker's saying what he thinks he needs to say. There's a lot of quarterbacks like that, though. Carson Wentz would be like that. There's a lot of them. Kyler Murray would be like that. But with Joe Burrow, I honestly believe he believes that.
Yes, he
does. I have no doubt that he believes it.
Yeah, that we're going to win
and
around
that's
here.
That's what you need. That's what you want to transform an organization is a guy that has that level of confidence. I'm just so surprised, and I didn't hear it, so I don't know, but for two guys who played the game, and Keyshawn and Jason Williams, for them not to, and I don't know who said what, so I'm just going off of what you said.
Yeah.
But I really have a problem with them not recognizing that that is a level. Now, he said, now Chris Broussard, I was listening to Chris Broussard and the other guy, the Odd Couple, Rob Parker. Yesterday, they said an over-under 5 playoff wins. I'll make it 5.5. Do you think he'll have more than 5.5 playoff wins his whole career?
His whole career?
It's easy to say yes, but keep in mind.
I'm going to say absolutely.
It is hard to get. You got to win on a regular basis.
Well, look, they've got the if they get some offensive line help, defensively, right. Obviously.
I said over, too.
I'm going over.
I said over, too. They got a lot of weapons. He's got guys to grow with, too, and Chase and T. Higgins.
Yes.
Even Joe Mixon. They'll find a running game. To me, I think it goes over 5.5. I'm really shocked. The Keyshawn and those and whoever said it would have a problem.
Go Joe, go! They were screaming, "Go Joe!" You're gonna play some of it on the other side. We'll play some of that on the other side. Right now, though, let's talk about Aqueduct Plumbing and Billy and Mary and the great people over there that we really like these people. And listen, when you call, 90% of the time, you're gonna be talking to the owner or the owner's sister, Mary. Free estimates, fair quotes, honest pricing. No extra add-ons. This is something, and I'm a big believer in this in business, and they're big believers in this, and we've talked about the Chastangs and how they believe in this as well, the add-on stuff, that all of these businesses, and you're just like, really, really? You guys got to just, why are you got to gouge me every time? And that's not the philosophy at this business, at Aqueduct Plumbing. 281-488-6238. You want a contractor that you can believe in, and they're going to do all of the work. Aqueduct Plumbing. Lance, when you call a plumber, in the past, it's always been like kind of a sleazy business. These people bring honesty to it.
Hey, you don't know. I have to call my buddy who has his own business. He uses contractors and like, hey, do you have a plumber I can use? Because I want somebody I can trust. Yeah. And then I found Aqueduct Plumbing. The first issue we had, we called them. They were out there. in quick order and took care of it. It was not a major deal. We were hoping it wouldn't be. They took care of it. It was effective. It was very affordable. And that's what I'm saying. It's quick, it's affordable, and most importantly, it's honest. And no matter whether your job is a large job with a repipe under your house or a smaller job like fixing a faucet, you can trust them.
Absolutely. So give them a call if you're looking for that plumber, 281-488-6238 or thebenchplumbing.com.
ESPN 97.5.